Okay.
Welcome everyone. Welcome everyone. Repeat offenders as well.
Yes.
So as I mentioned in the previous year, we don't really have a navigational map for Gula. It's all new. And because it's so new, it should breed humility and caution, responsible redemptive behavior, not reckless redemptive behavior. So much of this process seems different than we expected. We dreamed for thousands of years of a perfect world, untainted by human hand. And yet here we occupy a real world of the Jewish state with corruption, crime, opponents, war, secular leadership. And so many people have a difficult time reconciling Eretz Yisrael with the state of Israel. They just can't wrap their hands around that contrast. There are sheets over there on the set, please. So perhaps by looking back to past snapshots of redemption, we won't have precise roadmaps, but a generalized sense of how things unfold. Or as I say, where I used to come from, where this puppy's landing. So the first Geula took place in Mitzrayim. When we read, the sheets over there, please. When we read about the redemption from Mitzrayim, the Jewish people have no expectations. They're a fledgling and weak, victimized nation, browbeaten by 200 years of slavery. Hashem has no expectations of any human voice or human initiative. But sometimes you have to read parallel narratives in Tanakh to uncover stories that appear in one part of Tanakh and not the other part of Tanakh. Now, why they appear in one part and not the other, it's a literary question, but that's a whole different conversation. If you read Yechezkel Parakhaf, a whole different narrative unfolds. Yechezkel Parakhaf comes with expectations. Hashem says, walk away. I know your peril is to rebel against the Egyptians, but at least show some defiance. Walk back your pagan obsessions. We sugarcoat the past. They were all great. We were all midgets. Get that enfeebling myth out of your head. Not everyone in the path was righteous. Not everyone in our generation is feeble. People come and go. People have strengths. People have weaknesses. So Hashem says, I know you can't rebel against Pyro and his taskmasters, but at least walk away. You're just obsessed with pagan. At least walk it back. Vayomahu, source number one, Asasiyas Adilot, Zem Eretz Mitzrayim. I declared, I designed to liberate them from Mitzrayim. And I said, Belmar, Ish Shikut Seyna Hashlifu, Le Mitzrayim Alfi Tamo. Please, welcome, please, walk away from them. Not you. Look at God. Jews, walk away. You come in, it's not really. What a greeting. Now walk away. Okay, it's right here, up front. Okay, become a rod. Anyone else needs a sheep, okay? I'll no longer use that phrase, walk away. At least in England, maybe other places. Walk away from the pagan obsession. What was our response? Well, underwhelming. Source number one is, you could say, not lo shlichu. We didn't throw it out, we didn't walk away. So listen to this phrase, it's like line four somewhere on the source sheets. Hashem threatened us with extinction. It would all end. We didn't deserve to be redeemed from Mitzrayim, says Yechezkel, unlike the narrative above. So why didn't he? Ba'amah, look at line four. These words seem familiar to you. Ba'amah, v'shpoch ha'masei alehem. I'm going to pour my anger out against you. What does that sound like? V'shpoch ha'masei alehem. The original employment of that term was hurled at the Jews as a threat for your extinction. On the night of Pesach, we try to redirect it. Not us, them. Not us, the wicked people. Not us, Hashem. This is a harrowing phrase. See, Yechezkel begs the question that Shmos doesn't. Why were we redeemed if we didn't deserve it? Don't worry, Yechezkel provides an answer. Va'as, line number five, Laman Shmi. I did it for the sake of my name. Levilti hachel enei goyim eshehem b'socham. 400 years have been invested in building this new movement called monotheism. Initially, only individuals discovered Hashem peering out from this veil of violence and this veil of nature. Those individuals built a family. They became a clan. Now a nation. 400 years of rough sledding.
for a violent and theologically chaotic world. Please take a source sheet, please. You're the source sheet mother, okay? People come in, you get them a source sheet, or I'll ask you to leave, okay? What's your name?
Gabby.
Okay, you're now the source sheet monitor, Gabby, okay? Take a sheet. Okay. I was told that English people are prompt. Yeah. It's a day of shattered myths. Okay, it's good. I'll report back to the Israelis. Not so. Come on in, one and all. It's all good. I'll take attendance next time. Come on in.
I think it was that way.
400 years have been invested in promoting Hashem's presence in this world. And if Hashem had eliminated us, those 400 years would be worthless. And Hashem would have to begin anew. And that would have been a Chilul Hashem. Because Chilul Hashem occurs anytime Hashem regresses from this world. And we didn't deserve to be redeemed that day in Egypt. But Hashem redeemed us, not for our sake, but for His sake. Va'as l'man shemi. Read those words again. Line number 5. There is a model of redemption on display here, which resurfaced thousands of years later. Did we deserve to be redeemed in 1948? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't believe we're more righteous than our predecessors. But one thing I do know, 1945 is the darkest period in human history since the day we left Jerusalem. Because the 2,000 years since we left was littered with pogroms and inquisitions and suffering and persecutions and deportations and auto de fés and... But nothing that occurred during those 2,000 years begins to approach the attempt to systematically eliminate everything and anything Jewish from this world. Hitler had a list of 200 Albanian Jews in his bunker. Do you imagine my fighting a multi-front war and still chasing 200 Albanian Jews? He had designs of New York shul synagogues in his bunker. It wasn't about Europe. And when Jewish blood is spilled and murdered like dog's blood in the streets of Europe, it's not just an assault on the Jewish people, but it's an assault. Where was Hashem in 1945? You see, believers are able to peer through the fog and see Hashem. But the average person doesn't possess those lenses. We have X-ray vision. Most people don't. And Hashem was sadly, tragically absent from this world. Listen to my next statement carefully. A Chilul Hashem of that magnitude required a proportionate response. I'm not creating equality or equivalency between the Holocaust and the state of Israel, Chas V'Shalom. The Holocaust is too large to wrap your heads around. Don't try to simplify it. One thing I do know, Hashem had to take some bold action to restore His presence to a world in which His presence was quickly vanishing. And where is Hashem in 2022 compared to where He was in 1945? You know when I thought of this parak in Yechezkel? About 20 years ago, there was a ceremony marking the liberation of Auschwitz, the 50th anniversary, the 40th, I forget which anniversary it was. A few months earlier, the Israeli Air Force was invited to participate in war games with the Polish Air Force. Then a few months later, the ceremony takes place. And the Israeli commander of the squadron that was meant to participate in the war games says, we will only fly in Verdun in these war games, the Polish city of Verdun, if we're first granted a symbolic flyover Auschwitz as part of the ceremony. And initially, the Polish parliament protested. Auschwitz is a cultural site. It's a historical monument. You can't introduce armaments of war. But here's Adam. Here's a Spartan Jew. No, which impressed me because his family wasn't imperiled by the Holocaust. I would expect it from an Ashkenazi Jew, but he pretty much skirted the Holocaust. But his Jewish identity would demand no less. Israeli jets will only fly in Verdun if they first fly in Auschwitz. And I remember listening to the radio, this is before internet, or the early internet, listening to the ceremony. And he pulled his team into the formation in the skies above Auschwitz. And has been looped down for that sortie. As Jews gathered on those train tracks that witnessed such horror. What was the average lifespan in a death camp? Not a labor camp. 2 hours? Disembarkation, separation from family, goggles, spectacles taken from you, hair shaven, clothing taken, walking through a tube in minus degree weather, covered on both sides by barbed wire with dogs barked. When you went to get the gas chamber, you ran in. You were frozen with the thaw. and we were hoisting flags, singing our tikva, and he announced on his loudspeaker, on his radio, Gicha. Gicha in Hebrew means a sortie, a flyover. Gicha achat avor Am Yisrael. One flight for the Jewish people. Gicha achat avor Eretz Yisrael. One flight for the land of Israel. Gicha achat avor Korbanot HaShoah. One flight for Holocaust victims. And I asked myself, in 1944, how desperately did we plead with Roosevelt and with Churchill for that one flight? In 1944, the Luftwaffe had been eliminated. The skies of Europe were in complete Allied control. And one uncontested bombing mission over the railroad tracks of Auschwitz could have spared 750,000 Hungarian Jews from deportation from Budapest, which began in the spring of 44. But in 1944, 750,000 Jewish lives wasn't worth one uncontested flight. And I can't imagine a Chilul Hashem greater than that. If you told me I could save 750,000 people, I'd get in a plane right now. Figure it out. I'll get up there. I'll work it out. 750,000 people? And now we had our flight. And now we had our air force. And I felt Yechezkel coming to life. I felt the circle being completed. Va'as l'man shmi. Somehow, slowly but surely, bit by bit. It's not about us, Hashem. We are part of your celestial narrative. What happens to us reflects upon you. As we rise, you rise. As we fall, you become more obscure. Now we have our state. We've been restored to the historical stage. You've been restored to international consciousness. And as we grow and succeed, your name and fame grow. And that's one snapshot of earlier redemption that reminds us that redemption comes in many different varieties. It doesn't accord to one model or one prototype. Another snapshot. Less renowned, less celebrated. In the middle of the first Beis Hamikdash, the Jewish kingdom is badly split between north and south. Generally, the kings of the north are wicked. Generally, the disobedient murderers. We now view the administration of someone named Yeravam, but don't, but you're not the Yeravam, the Yeravam of infamy, Yeravam's successor, Yeravam ben Nevat, the grand paganist who murdered. This is his successor, Yeravam ben Yoash. But you know what? His record was much different. Bishnas Kamesh is very good guy. I'm watching. Mishnas Chamesh Tishrei, Amatzia ben Yoash, Melech Yehuda, Melech Yeravam ben Yoash. Same record, same pockmarked administration, murder, paganism. What happened during Yeravam ben Yoash's, not Yeravam ben Yoash, what happened during his reign? Well, let's see. Line number three. He expanded the borders of the Jewish people to the Mediterranean Sea. Grand territorial conquest. This is our Russia, Nishtat Tzadik. This is our Russia. Why? Ki Ra Hashem, Mesami Yisrael, Marim Ma'od. Hashem saw the plight of the Jewish people was deplorable. Ve'evetzatzor, no allies. Ve'evetzatzor, ve'enozer li'Yisrael, v'lod. Diber Hashem, Limchas Hashem, Yisrael, mitachas Hashemai. Hashem would not allow the Jewish people to disappear. Vayoshim b'yad Yeravam ben Yoash. So the hero that day was idolater. If when I read Yechezkel Parakaf, I think about 1948. When I read Malachim Beis Parak Yudalit, I think about 1967. 1967 has undergone radical historical revisionism. It had nothing to do with territory. Absolutely nothing. They were digging 80,000 mass graves in the parks in Israel, expecting an onslaught. People were descending into basements in place of bomb shelters, taking their luck. If, let's say, the left part of the building collapses, the least will survive. If you're not in the basement, the whole building will collapse. Women and children were being sent to England, to America, for safety. The last thing on anyone's mind was Yerushalayim? Gush Etzion? Military generals are tasked with thinking out of the box and letting their minds wander and think of every remote scenario, because in the heat of the war, you won't be able to think clearly. So every possible scenario has to be tabled and ready. In their wildest imaginations, no one even envisioned entering Yerushalayim and returning to the heartland of Jewish history. It was inconceivable. Boys and girls would come to school for weeks before 67, say Tehillim and go home. No classes, no courses, no tests, no books. Our territory was indefensible. Our boundaries were too narrow. You heard the stories. You've seen the shelled out tanks on the road to Jerusalem. Those years were not years of plenty and abundance. They were years of rationing and diplomatic isolation. No one traveled there. 6 days, the world changed. Sheshes and Mebereshes. Again. Hashem created the world in 6 days. He created the world of redemption in 6 days. And he rested. And he's waiting for us to complete it. Sheshes Yavim, Asa Hashem, Asa Shemaim, Besaretz, Asam Yisrael. That's exactly what happened in 1967. So if you think it can't really be redemptive because it was Moshe Dayan, not David HaMelech, or because it was Ariel Sharon and not Mashiach ben Yosef, or because it was Mati Gor, the general walked in valiantly and triumphantly into the old city instead of Chafetz Chaim. Read those last five words carefully and let them sink into your subconscious. Vayoshiim biyad Yerubam ben Yoash. Come on, boys. You look like you love the little Gemara, right, girls? You have a Kal V'chomer. I know it's a toughie, right? Move your finger. If Hashem can redeem us to Yerubam ben Yoash, maybe he can also redeem us to Herzl ben Gurion Bategor. Right? They weren't exactly murderers and paganists. Not exactly the pie we hoped for. Not exactly the idyllic redemption of our dreams. But you know what? Reality leaves a lot to the imagination. And don't get caught in a prison of imagination and expectation, because you'll be blinded to what occurs in front of the ever-evolving history of our people. So the first snapshot is Yechezkel Parakav. Second snapshot is Malachi Meis Yudal. What do we have till 5:30? Yeah. Third snapshot is, of course, Hanukkah. Hanukkah happened at a very, very pathetic point in Jewish history. Here, ask me to list the top five darkest moments in Jewish history since the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. Top five, bottom five, but it would have to be those 200 years intervening between Hanukkah and the Roman demolition of Yerushalayim. Internecine struggle. Civil war. It is a myth that the Romans captured Yerushalayim. We self-immolated. There were at least four sects, rival sects in Jerusalem, killing each other, burning each other's grain. We had, by all accounts, enough grain to outlast the siege of 5 or 6 years. Would it have been enough to defeat the Romans? Hard to tell. But things happen. Their attention gets redirected. There are battles in France. The armies have to be, who knows? Head to head, we don't beat the Romans. But time is something also. You delay for time, you stall for time. You never know. Lady luck shines on you. The Romans marched into a city of corpses. The Romans marched into a starved city of skeletons. Literally the scenes of the Holocaust. And we did it to ourselves. And we're constantly under foreign tyranny. Read Sefer HaMakkavim once. Not the documentation of the miracle, but what happens after the miracle. Mass executions of Jews. People come from the north in tattered clothing, bearing reports of mass savagery. Hiding in caves from invading armies. It wasn't a peaceful Pollyannic where we deducted the next stages. It was chaos, civil war, religious disintegration. The office of the high priest was contaminated by Tzedukim. 90% of the time, the high priest had to be dragged out dead from the Kodesh HaKadoshim by the rope around his leg because he violated and short-circuited. This was a carnival. So what are we celebrating? What makes Hanukkah so historic? 8 days of challah. Well, it's the oil, right? Hashem winked at us through the oil. Rambam doesn't mention the oil in his initial comments. the Rambam provides a standalone justification for Hanukkah. He documents the miracle and he concludes as follows. Source number 3. They defeated the Hashmonah, the Hashmonah defeated the Greeks, the Rahmanis, Achimichim, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Line number 4. The Chazra Malchus Li Yisrael Yeser Al Masayim Shalom. Jewish sovereignty was restored for 200 years. Flawed sovereignty, pathetic sovereignty, embarrassing sovereignty, disgraceful leadership. But when Jews enjoy sovereignty, in whatever form and whatever model it comes, we say hallel for 8 days. Because how elusive has sovereignty been for us over this long odyssey of the last 2,000 years? My grandfather told me the following story, which haunted me growing up. He said that one day he was returning home from shul Shabbos morning in White Russia, in the shtetl, and a Russian soldier barked at him and said, Jew, come here. My grandfather, 13-year-old virgin, ran over to this barking Russian thug who told him, you have 20 minutes to return home. Say goodbye to your family, collect your belongings. I am requisitioning you into World War I as my weapons bearer. I remember asking him, Zadie, what did you do? He took my hand in his hand, and I'm a Litvak, so I didn't really know my name. He would write me checks for my birthday, which I still have, because he didn't know my name was Michael. Malcolm Tarrigan, Mortimer Tarrigan, Morris Tarrigan, so I've got a whole collection of very exotic names. He called me Meshula. I'm Moshe. Meshula. He said, Meshula. I ran home. Say goodbye to my parents. Because I knew that if I weren't returned, he'd massacre my whole family. So I saved him. I fought him on the sword. And then he escaped. And Russian army wasn't known for its efficiency. Some things don't change. I was haunted by that story. It haunted my consciousness. Until I made Aliyah. And it was 1995 or 6, I made Aliyah, 1995, I think. And I'm driving home Hanukkah night in a rainstorm through Beit Lechem. We still didn't have the bypass road. And I'm chugging away in my Subaru, Fred Flintstone style, and you get to go a little faster. And I see the police lights in the background, and I pull over to the side. And an Israeli policewoman gets out and says, license, registration, I hand it over. She says, do you know you were speeding? I say, miss? Evidently. So she starts running a ticket. And I broke down in tears. Not for the ticket. What a schuss. What a schuss. My grandfather lived in abject fear of drunk Russian soldiers. And here I am, receiving a traffic ticket from my own policewoman of my own police force on her way home on Hanukkah to light candles as we jointly celebrate our sovereignty. I will not languish in a cold jail cell. I will not be abused or tortured. No one will starve me. This is my police force. Could be my daughter, could be my granddaughter, what is chutz on Hanukkah? The next time you see a policeman in Israel or a soldier, just ask yourself, what would your parents do, your great-great-grandparents, if they saw that? There's only one thing. They would break down crying uncontrollably. Look at old Haggadahs, the four sons, the illustrations, the illuminations, the Chachams holding a book, and telling some simple things, Jane Delishaw, little kid. The Russia is always, the illumination of a Russia is a Russian soldier, or an Arab soldier, or a Polish Cossack, or a French soldier, or a Spanish soldier, because soldiers were always a symbol of violence and vulnerability, because they marched into town, and they killed, and maimed, and raped, and with impunity. Who will protect you? No one. So remember this Rambam, Chazra Malchus L'Yisrael. Was it perfect? Was the leadership hallowed? Of course not. Was it the redemption we've yearned for? For sure not. But when Jews enjoy self-governance, it happened again, actually, the story. About 10 years ago, I was vacationing with my family in Nahariya. So we're walking along the beach, and all of a sudden, my cell phone gets lost. So we fire over in the sand, 10, 15 minutes, it's gone. Kapara, move on. We're at a restaurant, and my wife's phone rings. We found her husband's phone. It's the police department. So I hustle over to the police department, and I walk in there crying, hugging, celebrating policemen. This was my first time in a police station since then. I'm not a drug lord. I'd never been in a police station. And just it hit me. I'm walking into a Jewish police station, my own sovereign nation. I mean, they just wanted to get rid of me as quickly as they could. Get this lunatic out of here so we can get back to the, I was crying and ta-da-da-ba. It's a schut yeshli. Who is this meshugana crazed? I got my phone back. Take it in. Redemption comes in many, many forms. You see, it's never going to accommodate human anticipation. Listen to what I'm about to say because it's crucial. Redemption, by definition, is asymmetrical and irrational. We try to redeem our world as best we can with human hands and human faculty, but when we come up short, as we inevitably will, Hashem enters our world and redeems it beyond our capacity. And beyond human ability, and beyond human logic, and beyond human, it is specifically the irrationality and unpredictability and asymmetry of redemption that renders it redemptive, that renders it divine. Because it is a leap into a world that we are not capable of thrusting towards. We try, we're inching, we're trying to accomplish as much of it as we can. I believe Mashiach will be very proud when he sees what we've built. But there's some thrust that human beings just can't achieve, and it's beyond capacity, and it's beyond logic. So when we nitpick religion into oblivion by applying rational pre-expectations, we lose the magic and the myth, the mystique and the luster of what it is to be redeemed, what is Yer HaKadosh HaShem really. Az Yashir Moshe B'nai Yisrael. What does Az mean? They didn't think. It was instinctual. Yeah, they could have analyzed Yamsuf to death. Well, maybe the Egyptians caused it on themselves, and maybe they came out another way. Is this really a divine hand? And maybe there was a tidal wave, and maybe we didn't redeem it. Maybe. It was just a moment. Shira Chadasha, Shibchu Geulim, the feeling graced by Hashem. And responding in the moment, Ashir al Hashem ki ga'oga asusra rama vayam. So those are three snapshots. Oh, we have 10 minutes. Right, is it 5:30?
Yeah.
We'll talk a little longer.
Even with this government in Israel.
Even with this government.
Sorry, I had to say.
Politics come and goes. It's like the rising tide and the receding tide. Today's policies are tomorrow's rubbish. And today's sandcastles are tomorrow's oceans. And history isn't shaped by politicians or headlines. It's shaped by quiet moral acts that you and I perform every day. They ripple a lot longer than policies. Policies are not worth the paper they're written on. Do your best, Baruch Hashem. I promise you. My grandfather, I spoke about, he left Europe 100 years ago, approximately, penniless. They brought over his entire family, brothers and sisters. Anyone walking this world with the name Carrigan is a product of his decision. And there are hundreds of them. No one celebrated, didn't make any headlines. No one noticed. Changed the world. So you change the world also, but quietly. Don't get lost in the attention grabbing. A lot of attention grabbing.
You're so right.
I hope.
I'm living.
One foot ahead, one foot in front of the other. Don't get lost in all this aspirational world changing. Change your world by living life the right way. But it notices it's impacted. So, we're supposed to talk about Geula, right? Not politics. So, what are we going to talk about? This notion that Geula is irrational was twice delivered to our prophets. Let me maybe with this one.
There's actually a password for Google. The password for Google is delivered to Yirmiyah, and it's delivered to Zechariah. But it's the same password. I'll tell it to you later. Yirmiyah is suffering the devastation around him in Yerushalayim. First base on Mikdash. He's writing kinos. You can see him with a pen and a parchment. He's writing kinos as it happens. The live documentation of kinos. He's live streaming it. And you find it's falling apart. And the ramparts are built. And the mercenaries are marauding and trampling over Yerushalayim. And Hashem says, Yirmiyah, I'd like you to purchase some land in Yerushalayim. And Yirmiyah is perplexed. Purchase land in Yerushalayim? It would be the equivalent of purchasing land in Mosul or Iraq or in Mariupol in Ukraine. There's no legal system. There's no land. It's about to be conquered. It's about to be appropriate to purchase land. And Yirmiyah speaks to Hashem in the following tongue. He says, I understand that we can't understand your wisdom, and I understand that you're the seer of all, and I understand that I'm a prophet. I get the concept. I've learned Eov before. I understand that we can't understand your ways. I got it all, but this is a little too much. This is a little bit absurd. Let's follow Yirmiyah's debate. Gadol Haitzah, source number 4 of Rav Halilia, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you are the possessor of all knowledge, Hashem Nacha Pikachos. These are words lifted right from Eov. You ever learned Eov? These are Eovian words. Basically, Eov couldn't understand the line, wisdom, neither could Yirmiyah. But Yirmiyah says this is ridiculous. He says, Atah Amarte Lai, Kinei Lecha Asada, line 3 from the bottom. Everything, Hanei Asol Olos Bo Ha'ir, the ramparts are built 4 lines from the bottom. Here didn't have Yad HaKastin. Atah Amarte, Kinei Lecha Asada, B'Kesef, and you want me to purchase land? It's ridiculous, Hashem. What does Hashem say? Ahitavar Hashem, will give me a lemar. Hine, Ani Hashem, will make kol basar. Hamimeni yipalei kol davar? Is there anything that to me is a mystery? To you, it seems baffling. Because you process history in 80-year swaps, or 100-year swaps, or 200-year swaps. I spend it. You see devastation, I see rebirth. You see loss of life, I see resuscitation and resurrection. So purchase that land as a symbol. I wish I remember that land. What is it, be a rich man here with me? In the heart of Yerushalayim. I used to interview boys. Try not to interview them. I'm trying to scale back. I used to be in charge of admissions to the yeshiva. And it was important to me not just to gauge their piety and their prayer and their personality, but their Jewish identity. Are you a proud Jew? Do you feel your Judaism deeply? So I'd ask the following question. If you could have a time machine with one setting, which period would you return to? Top 5 answers were Sina, Igrias, Yamsa, Vriasa, Olam, those are the top 3. Once there was a boy who turned the tables on me and said, Rabbi, what would you choose? So first of all, I accepted it. I loved his moxie. This guy's going places. I don't care if he's illiterate. He's, you know, they ask a rabbi, you're sitting there sweating, you want to get in, good impression. I loved it. He's going places. Probably like some Rosh Hashiva somewhere, yeah? I said, I can go to one place in history. I would go back and walk at it with the survivors of Auschwitz. First thing they did, find a niece from their shtetl and remarry, a friend of their sister. Let's rebuild. Let's make people after. How could you? How could you bring children into such a nightmarish world of murder, genocide? How could you? 80 years of hindsight. We know that the children born in 46 and 47 and 48, they marched in the fields of redemption. They pioneered history. They liberated our people. And that's hindsight. What type of moral courage would it take for them to withstand the devastating, devastating violence and stand tall in the face of injustice and toe the line? I would just want to feel that moral courage. I appreciate people with moral courage. Take stands and do what's right because it's right, rather than cowering to public opinion, offense, or weakness. You don't know. You don't know how small decisions turn the tide of history. And that's what Hashem told Yirmiyah. History will tie. History, the tides will turn. Just wait. And that becomes the password of Gula. Hamimeni Yipale. Yipale means Pella. Mystery. Irrational. Pei Lamed Aleph. If you open a Google account and it's a redemptive account, redemption@gmail.com, the password is always going to be Pei Lamed Aleph. Pella. Because redemption is irrational by definition. Because it changes the world we inhabit and we don't recognize it. It unlocks a world we're not familiar with. So we can't apply logic and ration to try to decode its terms. It's completely compatible. And then to Zechariah, Hashem provides the same message. Ko'amar Hashem, the famous metaphor, famous prophecy, well, this will end in the back of the page. Ko'am, bottom of the first page. Ko'amar Hashem, Tzimakos. Oh, Yeshubu, Zekenim, Zekenos, Merechogos, Ushalayim. One day the streets of Jerusalem will be filled with older people with their canes strolling through Jerusalem, taking nice walks. And little children will frolic. Zechariah is a very apocalyptic book. What is so apocalyptic about these visions? People living out their lives, being old enough to walk on canes? Children frolicking? It's normal. It's not apocalyptic. It's not redemptive. It's not prophetic. It's normal. If you live in Norway, it's normal. If you're a Jew, it's not. What's normal for other people is apocalyptic for Jews. Because our history is disproportionately asymmetrical. That's why it's prophetic. I was touched by two great people in this world. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zechar Tzadik Livracha, and Rav Yehuda Amital, who shaped me. Okay? And Rav Amital told me, get a kiss, go lay. Okay, I'll get it for my wife. Rav Amital told me that after the Holocaust, and he lived in Gibbat Mordechai, he lived in the Chevron Yeshiva, he would walk by the playground and watch the little children play. And he stood transfixed for hours crying. As those eyes had witnessed children being lined up on stony walls in Europe being executed. And he remembered this sukkim in Zechariah. And Hashem tells Zechariah, look at the next, everyone knows those words, you don't know the next pasuk. Ki yipale be'eni sheris amazeh, those who are privileged to see these sights. They'll be shocked. Tell us, it's a mystery. God, I'll be shocked also. What does it mean for Hashem to be shocked? It's impossible. It's hyperbole. What's so shocking about these pastoral scenes? What's normal in Norway is a little bit abnormal in Jerusalem. And both to Yirmiyah and to Zechariah, Hashem delivers the password of Jewish redemption. Hey, Lamed, Aleph. Irrational. Stop here. Stop here. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think I'm in this room, so I don't have to go anywhere. I think I'm in this room.